Democracy in Action, a program on how a state functions, featuring in-depth discussions with experts on governance, politics, and decision-making. Tune in as every week we explore the complexities of governance. What is democracy? What is your role as a citizen? All these and more in Democracy in Action, Thursday at 9 a.m. with a repeat at 9 p.m. the same day. Stay informed and engage with Democracy in Action, Radio Miraya, the voice of peace.
Hello and good morning. It's 9:15 a.m. Good morning and thank you for tuning into Radio Miraya. My name is Lucy Kiden and right now it's time for Democracy in Action, and our focus today is women in leadership. And so I have my guests here. We have Adut Christina Salva, Executive Director of South Sudan Women Empowerment Network and Deputy Chair of South Sudan Human Rights Defenders Network. And then we also have Mwinga Chelo, a colleague here at UNMISS. He's a gender affairs officer. Good morning, Adut.
Good morning.
Nice and time. Good morning, Mwinga.
Good morning, Lucy.
Well, thank you both for making the time to come and speak on this crucial topic, that is women in leadership in a democratic setting. And so first, let's understand, why even talk about women? Why is it an important topic, like in terms of inclusivity in politics and public life in a democratic setting? I'll throw that to Mwinga.
Okay, thank you very much, Lucy. Good morning, listeners. I think the whole principle of inclusion is what we are trying to do here. And we are, of course, focusing on women inclusion. But what this does in a democratic society is that if you include the citizens into the governance of the country, then you as a leader, both the governed and the governors, have sort of 2020 vision on what the issues are. So for us, we see that inclusion of different groups, including women in this sense, gives us that kind of latitude to address the issues that are affecting the people. And for in the long run or in the middle to the long run, you then begin to develop a sustainable nation.
Thank you very much. Now, coming to you, Adut.
Yes.
From your perspective, why is it important to talk about
you.
Women?
Thank you so much, Lucy. Thank you, Mwinga, for that. To add on what Mwinga has said, including women is not just a matter of inclusivity only. It's also a matter of life, because it's a matter of rights. It's a matter of good governance. It's a matter of sustainable peace and development, because women bring in this unique perspective and live experiences that lead to more inclusive policies, equitable decision-making, and stronger communities. And then we also believe that a society cannot progress when half of its population is excluded from participating in policies.
Okay. Yeah. All right. And yes, Adut, what are the main challenges women in leadership face in South Sudan?
Thank you so much for the question. Women in leadership in South Sudan face a lot of challenges, because first and foremost, it stems from the deeply rooted norms, society norms and traditions, and this affects them in various ways. For instance, patriarchal norms limit women's roles to domestic spaces, because you're a woman, you're excluded from participating in some of these spaces. Then there's also a lack of access to education and economic opportunities.
Could you maybe break down patriarchal norms? What are those, especially in the context of South Sudan?
Thank you so much. One of them is that at the grassroots, some women are not supposed to be in chieftaincy positions, for instance. And then there are some times when women are not allowed to speak. If you go to the grassroots right now, you realize that when a woman is speaking, men are having a meeting, a woman is meant to sit down, and then a man is standing up. A man is meant to sit on the chair while they sit on the mat, because it's like their points are not very relevant to the said discussion that they're having at hand. And then we also see patriarchy taking place in a way that women are given positions, they're given roles, but they're sidelined when it comes to great decision-making in the country and also in politics. Because we've seen women being put in powers and positions, but they hardly have something to say in regards to those positions that they hold. So basically they're having the title, but they don't have the right to access whatever they want to say to the public.
Okay. And so, yeah, now you can move on to the other challenges.
Thank you so much. The other challenge for me is that there is gender-based violence and political intimidation. In this case, we've seen this happening for the couple of months since the year began. We've had a lot of issues of regarding rape and also gender-based violence. And with gender-based violence, it's not only accustomed to those who are working, because even some women who are in big positions are also intimidated, because our men are not trained on how to handle a well-to-do woman or maybe a financially stable woman. They've not had that training, so they feel intimidated when a woman is in a higher position and then she's earning more than he is. And this sometimes brings in the wrangles in the community. And then also the lack of access to education and economic opportunities, because our women, majority of them, education-wise, they're illiterate to some degree, much as they have that informal education. But still, it's a problem because they cannot progress and go far as life is concerned. And then there's also the tokenism and lack of real decision-making power, even when appointed, the one I've just talked about right now. Because you can have the position, you're an executive director of something, and then you don't have any role to play in terms of decision-making. A man is then making these decisions, and those decisions are what the community goes by. Well, lastly, I will also talk about the weak implementation of laws and policies that protect and empower women. Right now, we are rallying behind to see that at least the parliament comes forth, and also for us to be able to have the gender, the anti-gender, GBV law, and then the family law bill also passed, because it has been down for so long. We've been waiting for this to happen, and it has not yet taken course. So basically, those are the things, points that I would highlight that are affecting women in the country. Thank you.
Okay. I would like to get into more detail about this anti-GBV bill and the family law a bit later on, to understand how it would possibly help in terms of making life easier for women in leadership. But first, let me come back to Mwinga.
Yes.
As we've been talking about the challenges, Adut has mentioned a number of them, GBV, access to education and opportunities, as well as patriarchy. Let's start with patriarchy. First of all, could you maybe define it for us?
Well, I think patriarchy is a system that really, in its intention, the intention is to safeguard the interests of the community. So some people are given power, and that power is supposed to be used to, you know, safeguard the interest of everybody in the community, men, women, children, you know, everybody. So I think, like every system, it's subject to abuse. And I think that's what, Adut is trying, Christina is trying to say. To say there are times when these things are misinterpreted to serve a particular interest of the people that are supposed to safeguard the interest of the community. I have witnessed this a lot, especially when I go into the, you know, sub-national level areas, the ones she was talking about at the grassroots, mm-hmm. where I have had to intervene in the sense that you have a workshop and then the men are talking, the women are not talking. So you as a facilitator, if you have a sense that there's a bit of power dynamics here, you have to separate the teams. I did that at several occasions, where I separated and then said, okay, what is it that is happening here? And then they will tell you to say, look, in our community, when you are not supposed to speak in the presence of a man, so that's why we are not talking. So you have to sense all those things. I think that is the patriarch she was trying to talk about. There's one other thing that I wanted to probably add to the issue of challenges. The other issue that I see is definitional, you know, I think there's so much focus on public leadership. Now, one can ask, what is leadership? Is it just public leadership? Or you can actually lead in different ways. You know, like, what are these spaces where you can give an opportunity for women to talk? Safe spaces, probably they don't even have to speak in public, but their opinions and issues make it to the public through a certain channel.
I like that you've brought this, and I was going to put it in this way. While you were talking about the systems meant to safeguard the community but end up being abused or misunderstood, you mentioned that women would say we are not allowed to talk in the presence of men, right?
Yes.
The family is the first unit of a nation, literally, and you would expect women to have leadership roles in the family. What are your thoughts about that? I mean, if she's not supposed to speak in the presence of men, she has men in the family, does she not speak in the family?
And that's the conversation, eh? And that's why I was saying the definitional issues of what is leadership.
yeah.
Because when you speak to these men one-on-one, they will tell you to say, look, actually, these decisions that we come and parrot, and I'm using the word parrot deliberately here, that we come and parrot in public, these are conversations that we have at home with our wives. And they have so much power in the sense that they will tell you, look, you cannot go and say this. Mm-hmm. This doesn't serve the purpose, you know, for the entire community. We think what you need to say is X, Y, Z. Mm-hmm. So they will tell you those things, except those conversations maybe don't make it to the public, or the purveyors of the conversations or the people that are supposed to carry the conversations to the public misinterpret them, or they simply don't, you know, take them to the public. So it's not something that you can go and do research on to say, did you speak to your wife before you came to the meeting? But these are things that you get to hear, you know, that, look, we have these conversations, they call them in our bedrooms, and then from there, then they make it to the public. So whatever we say as men in public is probably something that we consulted our, you know, our wives on. So
then why shouldn't the wives have to say it themselves in the public? That's a question.
Exactly. That's
right. Okay. Yes, you were still talking about some of these other challenges that come in with the focus being mostly in public leadership. What are those other areas where women can actually take leadership and have influence and contribute towards society, other than in public spaces, say political?
Thank you so much, Lucy, for that question. Actually, to me, leadership is leadership. He was actually talking earlier about the question you had asked on why women are they also free in their homes. And there's that notch that says that charity begins at home but doesn't end there, because how you are raised speaks so much volume on how you present yourself in public. And I believe some people are, even when they are being raised, they're intimidated. They don't know how to speak up their voices. To me, I believe leadership is not only in public spaces. It can even start from your own home state. Because once it starts from the home, it can go to the community. We have had women rising from schools, for example, and then later maybe they go into politics and that's it. But then we have also had women in the private sector. We've had women in the academia. We've had women in the medical fields. Rising in their leadership roles, because we've had different executive directors and also a woman being a chairperson of a very big and lucrative business in the society. So basically, it's not that we are limiting that women leadership to public spaces. We are also trying to see how we can be able to extend this kind of leadership also outside there. Because even within our societies, we have schools whereby you find from the headmaster to the rest of the members, it's all men, and then women are excluded from such places. So it's only, that's why we really, really need the 35% affirmative action to be emphasized and to be practiced, so that it can cover all, whether it's in the private sector, whether it's in the faith-based, for example, the church, whether it's in the CSO leadership, and also in the public spaces, which is opposed to politics and the governance. Thank you.
All right. You brought up the 35% affirmative action. Let's understand, what is the status now? Yes, we've had women come and go from different public offices, replaced by men, you know. Some remain vacant for a bit. Yes, what's the status now?
The status right now, I don't think it is much, because the 35% affirmative action remains not fully implemented, as opposed to what we expected, because we expected this to have happened a long time ago, especially after the signing of the Araxes. Unfortunately, it is not the case. So what happens in this situation is that much as we are trying to emphasize, the civil society is trying to do the advocacy and then also the monitoring to see that at least it is being done right. There are so many things that are also happening abroad. And for me to see, for me, the way I see that it can be handled, one is by accountability measures, holding accountable those officials that know that they're supposed to have the affirmative action in place and they're not doing it. And I believe that if they are held accountable, other political parties will also take up space and also do the needful. The next to me I see is that there is need for the CSOs to continue advocacy and also monitoring because at the end of the day, they are the voices of the community and the community counts on them to be able to pull out whatever they need in order to live in a good harmony. And then also there is need for capacity building because some of these women don't know their rights. There's need for capacity building. There's need for training. There is need for leadership training, as a matter of fact, and to avoid all these intimidations that women are going through in their workplaces, because we've seen women being removed in places of high power and replaced by men, and I don't think this is something that they really wanted to prioritize. And then also there is need for women leaders to be placed in positions of real influence, not just symbolic roles like we have always seen. And yeah, I think with this, the community can move forward and we can be able to achieve the 35% affirmative action in place.
All right. Thank you, Adut. Coming to you, Mwinga. She talked about accountability.
Yes.
What should that look like?
So let me start off from the whole essence of the 35%. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good place to start.
Yes.
That's where she ended.
Yes, it is.
And then accountability, of course. I think the way the clause is currently framed, I think it needs a lot of strengthening because it's subject to a lot of multiple interpretations. You know, if you say 35% in all institutions that are going to be, you know, created, that limits your, there's really very little wiggle room in terms of movement.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you know, Christina is saying, if we could have a mechanism that actually says, okay, this is what the aspirations of the framers of this particular clause had in mind, how do we then walk that from the framers' perspective into actual implementation mechanisms? Okay, I think we are going to see a lot more movement in terms of the 35%, because like she's saying now, the numbers don't look good.
Mm-hmm.
Even in places where institutions are constituted by appointment, there you would think, well, it's easy. You say 35, if there are 10 people, you say, okay, 3, 4 will be women, you know, 6 will be men, or 5 or 7 will be men. But it's not happening. And this is because when it comes now to the idea of accountability, you are supposed to walk that into something that actually says, if you don't do it, these are the consequences. And I think that is where we need to invest a bit of time in terms of how do we make sure that this 35% is walked into a mechanism that actually people are going to be called to account. For instance, a political party, they look at the executive of the political party, if the law says 35% is supposed to be women, it's the law. And if you don't have that, you don't get registered. You know, these are some of the things that we probably could start focusing on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. And now, in terms of women's roles in this regard, what should women do to improve this status of, okay, she obviously said it's not looking good, it's not implemented fully. How can women ensure that it's better and it gets better along the way? We're expecting, of course, elections next year, at least before then.
Thank you so much, Lucy, for that question. Actually, to me, this is not something that women can do alone. I believe it's more of like it needs a collective effort of everyone. Whether it's women, whether it's the youth, whether it is the men in the political spaces and also the government, it requires all the stakeholders to put in an effort in this. Because right now, if the generation is not tackled, it is going to extend to the next years and the next generation to come. So basically, to me, what the women should do first and foremost is to raise their voices and concerns through awareness creation and advocacy in different places. They have to speak out because they say when you're in your house, no one is going to come and knock on your door to say, hey, you need this. It has to be them that are willing to put it out there. And then because we've gone to places and we're like, why are only men? Where are the women? And they say, they've refused. For instance, if you go to schools right now, you realize that maybe out of 30 teachers, only 5 are women. And then you're like, why is it that there is no gender balance in this? And then they will tell you the women are refusing the roles, which is not true. And I believe every woman has to speak up for whatever they need, if it is leadership positions or if it requires joining political spaces, this is very important. And also women need also to work on their education levels, because some are not in education because of lack of funds, but there are others who are capable. But because maybe there is this ignorance or maybe they don't want to participate in this, they feel like there is no need. But it's really very important because the world is moving at a fast pace and they need to learn so much. Because how many women today are in South Sudan are into AI? I don't think there are so many. And they really need to learn by enabling themselves on a personal level and a personal initiative. Women also need to create a safe spaces for themselves to be able to speak and also to meditate upon themselves and also see where are the vacuums and where there is a need for them to have an improvement. Because we've seen women being fragmented in some ways. You find that the medical sector says, I know we want to deal together as medical team, and then you see the leaders in politics saying, the women in politics saying, we want only our space, we don't want to mix with other women. So it becomes really a problem. So that fragmentation needs to be balanced in a way whereby they can come together and women, as women. There is also need for them to consult the media houses, to put it there so that at least they can reach the entire communities, whether it's at the state level or at the national level. Lastly, to me, I would also want to emphasize the fact that women need to complement each other, not to compete. There is competition, but the one that they're doing right now is really unhealthy, and they cannot count on each other. So they need to have that trust among themselves in order for them to move forward. Because if you say, for example, I say, Lucy, we have to organize 1,000 women and we are going on a peace march. So I don't want to go to the streets tomorrow and I'm the only one, or we are the only two and the other thousands are missing. So we really need to have that trust among ourselves and complement each other, not to compete among ourselves. Thank you.
All right. Build trust. Do not compete. Instead, complement each other. If you've just tuned in, this is Democracy in Action. And we are focusing on women in leadership, as we've been discussing the importance of having this discussion. First of all, why should we have to talk about inclusion of women in the political and public sector? But also, we've looked at some of the challenges women leaders are facing, which includes patriarchal challenges, GBV, access to education, lack of access actually to education and opportunities. And then we've looked at the 35% affirmative action, which has not been fully implemented in the different political parties, government levels, as well as transitional institutions. And that being the status, Adut was just saying that women need to come together and unite towards improving it. Shortly after the break, we'll be continuing the conversation, and you can actually join in and be part of this discussion. You'll be able to call in and ask a question or even comment as you've been listening. You also have an opportunity to text in on 0912-177-141. To call in, the number is 0912-067879, 0912-067929, and 0912-068101. That will be after the break. We'll be back.
أنتم تستمعون إلى راديو ميرايا صوت السلام.
السلام عليكم. عليكم سلام.
I'm called Emanuela Sande. We have to have peace and reconcile with each other. When there is peace in the country, each and everyone will know that they are brothers and sisters. We shall live in love and harmony.
Salam. South Sudan, a new dawn, a new beginning. Let's celebrate the peace.
Alaikum salam. Welcome back. This is Democracy in Action. And as we speak about women in leadership, with me is Adut Christina Salva, Executive Director of South Sudan Women Empowerment Network and also Deputy Chair for South Sudan Human Rights Defenders Network. And Mwinga Chelo is here. He's the Gender Affairs Officer at UNMISS. Well, as we continue the conversation now, earlier, Adut, you had talked about there's something I wanted to bring you back to, but I'll get back to that later. Let's talk about the Transitional National Legislative Assembly. The body reconvened yesterday after about over 6 months, actually. And yes, how can Parliament ensure and support more women being involved in leadership, in the transitional process, as well as preparations to move out of the transitional period?
Thank you so much, Lucy. For me, I'm sorry to say this, but I think even the Parliament should start with themselves. Because if you look at the number in the Parliament, we have 550 members of Parliament. And then the other side, it's 100, which makes it 650 members in the Parliament. And if you see the number of women that are in the Parliament, they are not up to half of that 650. Because the last I checked, there were less than 200 women in the number that is mentioned. So basically, to move on, it's good that they are back and they have reconvened. For me, I see there is need for them to review and enforce gender-sensitive laws and policies. And this is what I've been talking about earlier, the anti-JBV bill and the family law bill, because they are very important in our space right now as women. And it's way long overdue, because SWEN, as an organization, started this initiative back then in 2016, before it was officially handed to the Ministry of Gender, Child and Social Welfare. And there is also a need for them to strengthen accountability mechanisms for implementing the 35% quota, which is ideal for the women in the country. And they also need to prioritize legislation that protects women from violence and discrimination. We have seen really violence happening in women. We've seen rape cases increasing in the country. What I don't understand is what is causing these rape cases. Is it a societal issue? Is it an economic factor? Is it something to do with spirit? Is it spiritual? We don't have an idea. So it's really good for them to come up and prioritize legislation that protects women from violence and discrimination. The next is, for me, is for them to create communities specifically focused on gender peace and women's participation. Most cases, when you talk about development issues, it ends in Juba. Maybe further it could go to Malakal, could go to Wau, town areas. But there are places where this is more needed than ever. And I believe every community has members of parliament representing it. And this is the essence for them to be able to speak out on behalf of their communities. And it's unfortunate that we have some members of parliament, sorry to say, that have not even visited their constituencies to see their problems and what they really lack and need and move forward with. Then there's also for them to ensure that national budgeting allocates funds to women programs and leaders for development, because if we have a special money meant for a women empowerment, it is supposed to be given to the women directly, vis-a-vis diverting that money for other things in most cases. And this is where the sidelining comes in, because at times when something is meant for women, it's always diverted with a sense that women really don't need it, or they can wait for the next quota, which never comes. So basically, it's important for them to put this in action so that we can move forward as a country.
All right. Thank you for that. Now, yes, earlier, this is what I'd wanted to be broken down a bit. The importance of the anti-GBV bill and family law, which I believe Parliament could expedite. How would this help women lead better?
Let me start from the idea of the Parliament. To say, Christina talked about accountability. I think if there's a place where this can be enforced, for lack of a better word, is Parliament's role for oversight on the executive. Okay, they have the means now. There's a revitalized agreement. There are other laws, the subsidiary laws, that they can use to hold the government accountable to implement, you know, these laws. The Anti-GBV Act, I think the elements are there that can actually lead to protection, okay, especially of women, because SGBV has got offshoots that that we probably don't see with the naked eye because they don't manifest, you know, physically.
Mm-hmm.
But the effects of it could be long-lasting, including loss of confidence, loss of self-esteem, all those things. In a person who presents with those kinds of inadequacies in a competitive society has got very little chance of success. So I think this is the intangible benefit that you could have if you had a law that actually punished people that you know committed those crimes, and then in terms of punishing, it also prevents other people from committing the crime. So we should look at it in a broader view than just the law itself to say, okay, if somebody commits a crime like that, they'll serve 30 years in prison. What about the survivor or the victim?
Mm-hmm.
What is it that we can do for them to restore what they had, their dignity, as it were, which is the basis, their dignity before that they were violated? So I think this really is important for that Parliament as it is sitting now, and probably, I don't know the stage it's at now, but I think the last time I checked it was the Council of Ministers, if they could push that to be enacted as a law, and then actually you now invest in strengthening capacity for the National Police to enforce it.
Okay.
And then the whole justice chain to make sure that this particular, you know, issue is addressed.
All right. Yeah. Now, I know ANMIS has been doing a lot of work with women, GBV, but also working with leaders in the political space. What are some of those things, and what more can be done?
I think the function of the good offices where we engage, or where the ANMIS engages with the political leadership, I think is very, very important. It's a key entry. Entry point where you engage, and then you sort of drive, you know, the direction of where we need to go. The biggest issue we have in the country is insecurity. And in an insecure environment, it doesn't matter whether you're a genius or you're not, or whatever it is that you can do. I think to thrive in such an environment is just really hard.
Okay.
And you see, when you talk of opportunities, opportunities are also created because of the environment. Peace, what they call peace dividends. It's a dividend nowadays to have peace. I mean, we have been selling the country of my origin, Zambia. Yesterday, the president was basically selling peace. He was saying, look, I know you are an investor. You want to come in. You're asking me, how will my company be 20 years from now? You can rely on the fact that we have changed president 7 times. Nothing has happened. That's a peace dividend. That is what you reap out of peace.
Yeah.
So I think most of that is why our leadership has been engaging to make sure we support the government in implementing, you know, the peace process.
All right.
And some of the things are really programmatic because, Christina was saying, you cannot support a person to be a candidate as a member of parliament in an upcoming election if they don't have the capacity to develop a message, if they don't have the capacity to speak publicly, if they don't have the capacity to communicate. So those are some of the things that the UN system, you know, in the broader definition, has been doing to make sure that we build capacity in those in the women as well as the men,
mm-hmm,
that want to, you know, pursue a political leadership. So that when they get there in parliament, for instance, how do they do their representation role? How do they do oversight? How do they do legislation development? So those things are things that we've been putting in place. Of course, there are several other things that maybe we can talk the whole day.
Well, you definitely need to encourage them to speak more with the media.
Exactly.
All right. Let's hear from you. Do you have a question or a comment? Do call in right now, and we have a call on the line. Radio Mirai, hello.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning. Your name and where you're calling from?
Jacob Dior from Rumbek.
Yes, Jacob, go ahead.
Thank you. I would like to emphasize on 2 points.
Mm-hmm.
Women empowerment and GBV. You know, when it comes to women empowerment, the policy in the constitution states it very well. But implementation is becoming a problem in all aspects of life, from the NGOs, private sectors, government. My major concern in women empowerment, women themselves are letting themselves down. For instance, if you are a leader and someone comes in, another lady, maybe your secretary or deputy, this person will work against you saying, I cannot listen to a fellow woman. I cannot adhere to rules of a fellow woman. From here, men who are fighting for gender balance like me becomes very hard to understand.
Okay,
where
Jacob.
Do we stand? We do our part. But when it comes to GVV, there is underlying thing that has not been done in the country. And which if there are people like the lady you have in the studio can also take it out to the society.
And what is that?
The NGOs and the international organizations, when it comes to women employment, there are aspects that need to be studied critically. Some women get money and their husbands are the ones to sign on their behalf. Or when they get the money, the husband grabbed and the lady has no opportunity to speak. We really need to emphasize also with the NGOs, if anything happens like this, they have to speak up so that the government comes in and say no. Otherwise, we are not empowering women when it comes to that this time.
Thank you, Jacob. Thank you very much. Let's hear from another caller. Radio Mirai, hello.
Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Very good morning. Louis.
Yes.
Lucy, thank you very much. This is Stephen.
Stephen. Go ahead.
Yes, please. Yeah, I've not been listening, but I think there is a program going on.
All right, Stephen, we'll get back to you later. Radio Mirai, hello.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning. Your name and where you're calling from?
Marielle from Wow.
Yes, Marielle, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm really forget the program and that you know, God is not stupid. That is why he created the man and woman to be together, because when one part is not there, that means the world is missing some part. That is why he created them together, to support themselves, but not to be obstacle to each other.
Okay.
So sometimes women, they have their own problem, because when the husband trying to be support the woman, sometimes there are some ladies who will turn that hand. This my husband, I'm really fear him. And I give to Rato, Yangade, who is the Bafam Galan. And I'll give the video. I win Albam Galam there, who Bugulum, you know, Lano Damakov, who Rajil, Sipada Rujaga, and Anabakurum, Badamlo.
Kala Shukla.
I win him again. We are win, but. Bagiru le kalam tani. Fi wadin daru nama rajil wiadam zede. Baden lo lego guru kalas bamul dobozem. Guru kalas rajil daru vita ban mono.
Okay, thank you very much. Yes, let's take one more caller. Radio Milan. Hello.
Hello. Hello. Good morning.
Yes.
This is Benjamin calling from Juba, Hainim.
Go ahead, Benjamin.
Thank you. I appreciate the topic, and then you are. Guest in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to contribute something small. You know, for me, I'm very proud for the women, because I'm a leader today. I brought by the lovely mother and lovely friend as a mother.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to say something like the women of this of those days. They are really women, they are filling their places. But I'm very sorry to say this one, the women of today, because they're holding PhD, they're holding masters, so they don't have time to go to the grassroots. That is a problem. Because I had many, many points about the women on the ground, they're not educated. So why not the women should go and establish a school under trees for those women, so that they can cope up and coming up.
Okay,
you know? So,
thank you.
So very important.
Thank you very much, Benjamin. Yes, due to time, I'll take one last caller, and then we'll listen from our guests. Good morning.
Hi,
Sabah al-Nur.
James,
Father Leah James, Indak Sual? Okay, Kala, shukran. Thank you very much. Well, that closes it for the calls. Let's hear from our guests, as there are some comments and then there were some questions. The questions that I caught are coming in from Marielle in Wau, something about when women get money, they become arrogant in the home. Why is that? And this question was specific to Adut. And then here we have James asking about, Adut will also answer that in Arabic, why women fear to speak in public. And yet this issue of responsibility is not new. Women are responsible in the family and take care of the family. We do have a few minutes left. So Adut, could you first answer those two and then I'll go to Mwinga.
Thank you so much. I would like to also appreciate the callers for the time and also for them to ask the questions. I will start with my brother, Marielle from Wau. One thing is, Marielle, no one is perfect. Mm-hmm. We are all imperfect beings, and upbringing plays a very big key role in our lives. We've seen people being brought up from different families, and in most cases, as charity begins at home and it doesn't end there, mm-hmm. how you are raised plays a very key role in how you live your life, because in your question, you said that the women, when they get money, they become arrogant. This stems to the upbringing of the woman, because we've seen women who have held high power and they have high values, and they have not been that. So basically, I also think sometimes there are those men who prick women, and then they pretend, maybe because women, for us, actually we are multitaskers, but women also, it's hard for them to let go of something when it happens. So the man keeps poking, and then there's a time when she explodes. You're not like the outcomes that come with it. So in most cases, it's not associated with the money, but it's also how you treated her when she was in her low moments. So basically, it depends on how you are treated. Because if you treat a woman like a queen, of course, she will treat you like a king, and if vice versa. And because you do to us is what you get at the end of the day. And then to my brother, Benjamin, you talked about women going to the grassroots and also train them. Actually, illiteracy is not only for the women at the state level. We also need women. We also have women at the national level who are illiterate. Illiteracy in these cases is not only about education levels, but how you behave. Because we've seen people with PhDs, but they are also illiterate in how they behave and conduct themselves. But in this regard, when you're talking about education, we have empowered women influence other women. And I don't think there are women who have been empowered and they have failed to go to the grassroots to influence other women. And that's why we have majority of them in the NGO sector trying to do that advocacy. Thank you.
All right. There's this one about the fear. I'd like to bring it to Mwinga to just explain a little bit, because you talked about it earlier with the patriarchal explanation. And then I want you to conclude with this one question that has been sent by Ater Agar Ustaz. He's a teacher, and this is from Rumbek, and he's saying, how can a woman manage two duties of being a leader and a housewife? Conclude with that in just a minute, because we don't have time, Mwinga. Yeah.
I think very, very quickly, I did speak about it actually when I was talking about the effect of GBV, SGBV.
Yes.
So I did touch on the issue of confidence.
Yes.
A person cannot speak in public. They have no self-esteem. They have no confidence because of what happened to them.
Okay.
The issue of being a leader and being a housewife, I mean, it's like asking to say, can a woman work at the same time be a mother? Okay, so I think that question from Rumbek, really, that is how I can sum it up. They can manage to be both a leader and a housewife.
Thank you very much. This topic could go on forever, but we've come to the end of the discussion. And I just want to thank you, Adut, as well as Mwinga, for coming and speaking on it. This brings us to the end of Democracy in Action today, and we'll hope to have more opportunity to speak about these issues that affect the society. Thank you so much for tuning in.